This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hi, my name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. On May 15th, our office held its second annual domestic terrorism conference, where we brought together law enforcement, intelligence, and academic professionals to discuss the topic of domestic terrorism and its presence in our communities across the country and internationally. The series of podcasts you're about to hear are interviews with many of those featured speakers who were there that day. We hope you find them interesting and as informative as we did.
Hi, my name is Kim Brown, and you will be listening to part two of our interview with Frank Mink, a former white supremacist. In the second part of this series, Mr. Mink will provide an overview of white supremacist activity and some takeaways for law enforcement when dealing with white supremacists.
So I'm going to now pass it over to my partner, Kim.
Yes. As a member, then leader of a white supremacist group, what tactics did you use to recruit and radicalize individuals?
So we use what we call the greatest bait and switch ever. See, the bait, he's on the bait and switch. You know, say you're going to get something and you don't get it, you get something else when you buy it, you purchase it, or you believe in something. Well, we pulled the greatest bait and switch. We tell you that you're going to be proud of your heritage. Come be proud to be white. Come be proud of it. Go to a meeting. Go to one of our meetings. Not once do we ever talk about being proud to be. We always talk about, look at what they're doing. Look at what those people, it's always about the others. It's never look at what we're doing. Look at the great stuff we're doing in our community. So it's the greatest bait and switch is that we use something that you cannot change, and that is the color of your skin, to either promote you or degrade you. Look, racism is going to be here forever. It started with the Neanderthals, I think, our cousins, so it's always going to be here. But the tactics that we use in that fact is we know that we sometimes have a kid who has so much pent-up anger. I was like a soda bottle, and these kids are like soda bottles. They're shooken up, and they're just waiting to open and be exploded. You just need someone to direct the spray where you want it to go. And you just got to figure out, you got to be that person. So if I want them to hate the Jews, I talk about the Jews. And I mean, they want to believe in something. You know, everybody deep down, you want to believe in something. So I know that. And I started to know that. The other thing is we looked for kids, young adult males who, I didn't recruit girls. You know, I didn't know how to recruit them. I don't know what they think. I've been married 18 years. Still don't know what you think. I'm just wrong. But I know that when I recruit a guy, I have to deal with his masculinity, his ego. Again, I said it earlier, all the groups across the world that are like us, egomaniacs, low self-esteem. And if you could figure out how to equal that out in a person, you can get them out of it or get them to become good again, I guess. But once you feed his ego, and I start feeding his ego the bad stuff, it just takes, it's a certain tool you have inside you just how to tweak that stuff with people. And that's what I did, you know. I mean, I took every event. This is the one point, and this is where you get today's world. All the pundits we have, you know, from Fox News, all the pundits, they don't read like we read stuff. Like you read something in a newspaper, they read it completely different. I used to read it the way they used to read it. I would read a news story just for ammunition and argument. And that's all that, you know, the pundits do. So once I could do that, every day I would wake up, I'd read stories about whatever, and I'd always turn it into race. Again, if I could get a kid to wake up in the morning and his first thought is, why do they have BET? I got him. You know, I've already got him in that little bit of way. And then it's just all about the ego.
So then once you had these individuals hooked,
yes,
and then they're in your group, what type of activity was your group involved in?
Well, mine at the time, again, dealing with teenage boys, you know, we did a lot of just hanging out, but a lot of it also was, you know, the drinking, making it social. Again, a lot of these kids that I was getting were not popular kids. They were kind of the medium, middle popular kids. So now I get them that they're hanging out at the park. They're drinking. We used to have this big alley in Philadelphia called Skinhead Alley. We found this place so that we knew that all the suburban kids would come down and get to tell their friends in the suburbs. I go to the city every night. I go hang out in the city every night. And they go hang out in this alley with us and come drinking. And we made it popular. You have to make it popular. You have to make it be kind of cliquish, you know, in a way. And so once you would do that, you know, more and more people want to hang out. But the one last way, and this is protection, right? I go hang out in Springfield, Illinois, at these high schools where these jock kids are picking on the skater kids. And now my one skinhead that goes there is one of the skater kids. He's friends with those kids. And I go hang out one day and the jock kids threw a battery at them one day. And they threw a D battery at these skater kids. I walked over there with these other skinhead kids I brought with me to that high school. Now, it sounds kind of pedophile-ish, but I'm actually 17 at the time. I just don't look 17. I got tattoos all over me. But I'm 17. I fit the age. I walked over to these big jock kids and stood up for these kids, you know? And I'll never forget this big jock kid. He was big. And I was like, crap, this guy's going to beat the crap out of me. But he didn't. And he just turned to me and he goes, I said, who threw the battery, dude? Who threw that battery? And this big jock kid standing in front of me, he turned around and pointed at his friend. He goes, he did it. He did it. From that day forward, every one of them skater kids wanted me to be there. Every day they want me. This was before Columbine, but this is Columbine kind of stuff. Like these kids were constantly picked on, constantly stuff said to them every day. Now I'm there and now they don't get picked on anymore. That's loyalty. You got it, you know? So it's that type of stuff.
When you look back at the time when you were in compared to what you see now, what are some of the differences you see between white supremacist groups now compared to when you were involved?
The biggest change is what we didn't have and what they have today, and that's the internet. The internet is huge. Before, we had to get people to come to where we were and talk and actually be social and write letters, P.O. box number to P.O. box number. Now it's all different. I mean, anyone can join and anyone can pick up these beliefs. You know, any person who's feeling off for today can go look on something. You know, a black kid picked on him at school. Now he goes to look stuff up on the internet. Now, next thing you know, he's, you know, reading stuff on Aryan Nations. And it's crazy that way. So that's, I don't know what I would do with the internet. It would have been.
So do you think one is better than the other, or do you need both? Do you need that, maybe the online and then that face-to-face to continue it?
And they do. And the thing that we have to worry about today, and especially with your job, is, you know, it's the leaderless resistance. It's the guys who, you know, just want to go out and be the lone wolves and stuff. And, you know, Timothy McVeigh's in the world. I mean, those are the ones who stay off the chat rooms and stuff. But they always do pop up here and there. Like I said, there's always that paper trail, no matter what, internet or not. There's always that paper trail. And, you know, you start to see these things. So I think the internet is again, it's a great tool, but it's also, you know, you could stay anonymous and people could say whatever they want. So anyway, it's a different type of beast with that. But you're still dealing with the same type of human being. We're still human beings at the end. And that's where egomaniacs with no self-esteem. And it just, I'm telling you, one of those guys I was recruiting back in the day, no matter, they could be now in the movement still, in the Patriot Party, wherever some of these guys have all gone on to do. If let one of them back in the day fall in love with a cute black girl, I bet you they're out of the movement pretty damn quick. You know what I mean? It's just the way life is. So that happened too. So, or, you know, Mexican chick, they'd probably be out. So.
So you spoke a little bit about that aha moment when you said that, you know, this is not for me. So how did you leave or separate yourself from your previous life?
It was the easiest and the hardest thing. So the easiest thing was what I did was I stopped going around people, places and things, right? People, places and things. And so if I stopped going around them, I stopped looking for their validation. So that's what I did for about 6 months. I just stop going where they were going. If they were going to a concert and I'd already bought a ticket to be at that concert with them, I'll eat the money or I'll sell the ticket. I just wasn't going to go where they were at the time. I got really lucky because I moved back to South Philly. So I went back to my neighborhood. So there's, you know, millions of people. There's, you know, tons of 100,000 people just in my neighborhood alone. A lot of those guys were just neighborhood dudes who, in a way, it was bad too because it's, you know, very drug infested neighborhood too. And you know, I don't hide anything. Later on, I started getting into drugs, you know. Again, I'm a broken human being, so I got clean and sober, thank God. But, you know, but the neighborhood saved me in a way because the neighborhood protected me. Like, I got jumped at that funeral. There wasn't no one ever going to come in my neighborhood to come get me. You know what I mean? I got big cousins everywhere, you know. So we're all related down there in them Irish neighborhoods. We're off the boat from each other. So anyway, that saved me in a way. There's other people that don't have that option, and that's what Life After Hate is about. Because there's people that don't have that option of talking online with other people of like-minded things. That's one of the ways Life After Hate got formed. So, because when I got out, I had nobody. Life After Hate wasn't there. There was just two people in the movement, in the whole movement at the time, speaking out. Me and this guy named TJ Lydon, who's right now having health problems, so he can't speak out. But we were the two original guys back in the 90s, you know, early 90s that got out of this. So,
we see a lot of infighting and group fighting between white supremacist groups. Why do you think that is? If the goal is to for the race war or, you know, separation of races.
Well, I can tell you what most people want to hear, and that is that it's the ideology. They have a little tweak here in their audience. It's girls. It's one guy was with one girl, and now she left on, and she's now with another guy. And every group has fought wars over girls in the entire world, let alone, you know, we hated the Connecticut Skins because the Connecticut Skins were with this girl named Stacy, and she used to be with us. And, I mean, it all, we hated the New York Skins forever over a girl. You know what I mean? It's all, yeah, it's always over females. It makes the world go round. It makes the world go round. So there are little tweaks in each ideology. And of course, it goes back to when you do change your ideology, it's because you don't want to believe something that your enemy believes. So like with the New York Skins, we're all Odinist, then we're all Christians. You know, it's silly, but it's how the world moves like that. Like my beliefs would change by the groups I would be with. And so if I was like, I was always basically like a Christian identity skinhead. So I was part of the Christian groups. And then we would not like the other groups because hate's always got to hate. Hate is going to hate, as I say. You know, if we gave the white groups their own homeland, within 2 years, they'd be separating in there. You know, because hate just got to hate. They can't help it. It's got to feed off more hate. It's not going to all of a sudden be like, kumbaya. You know, there's not going to be a bunch of white supremacist John Lennons after they get homeland. It's not going to happen.
Do you think that's why a lot of white supremacists or nationalists speak about the Pacific Northwest?
Yes.
And so there was a Netflix show, and you know, they showed a couple of families trying to move out that way, mm-hmm. but then it really didn't, you know, kick off. We didn't see a lot of activity. So
right, and that's the goal. The Pacific Northwest is the goal of the white supremacist movement. Some groups want to take like Northern Michigan. You know that's where you guys people start to need to look. Is some of them, you know, the moms like the, you know, militia of Michigan or something like that. But it's groups like Timothy McVeigh actually came up around them groups. Those groups that are above the highways that are south is Detroit, Ann Arbor, up in northern Michigan, man. Those people are very rural. And they, you know what they see? They see the news from Detroit every night. That's what gets transferred up to there. So these people see the Detroit news, and that's all they see. And so they see black people, and they don't see them up in their area. And when you see them, it's on the news, and it's bad news. And they don't see the normal human being race that's trying to achieve stuff that they are. And so these people say, look, they're coming up here. They're going to come past that highway. And once they do, we got to tell them, we don't want them here. And that's where we're going to start running into them issues. Mm-hmm. It's all fear. It's all fear-based. It's got to be. You know what else drives someone to be that violent, that criminal? You know, it's fear. So that's one of the things we have to look for. Because when racists are racist like me, and every racist I've ever met, they all make exceptions. And we're getting off topic, but every racist makes an exception. You know, oh, I hate all black people for John. John, I went to work with John. John's a cool black dude. He's a good guy. Oh, so John, the one you know, he's cool, but all the rest of them, they're not cool because you don't know them. You know, it's like, so all races make exceptions, and it's silly. So
looking at recruitment and radicalization, what indicators should schools and law enforcement be looking for? So you spoke a little bit about what was going on at the school that you were at. Yep. You were 17. And so what should, teachers and law enforcement be looking for?
What we need to do is try to align where you want to take things seriously. So a kid starts writing a swastika. We need to start addressing it, not let it go. Not this thing that's going through phases. We can't just, we have to address the issue with the person. And that's why I've done like interventions on kids in high school who've gotten in trouble by high school, around their high school writing swastikas. And they're basically good kids that are trying to be rebels in a way. But I've done these interventions on those type of kids. And, you know, you just got to address it right away and not let it just sit and simmer and think that it's okay. And then the other thing is we don't want to always blow everything they do out of proportion. Because then they think everything I do makes big waves. And everything you do doesn't make big waves. You know, sometimes you just, it is what it is. So but we need to not let things go. We need, when someone says a racist, if you said a racist joke around me and we were all adults, I might kind of let it slide. And if you say it around my kids, we got issues. And I'm going to address it right there and there in front of my kids because that is not acceptable in my home. And stuff like that is not acceptable. And it has to be on all fronts. We can't say it's okay for some people to be racist and some not. I know that most people that are good-hearted, we will address all racism, period.
So what would you say would be the best way for law enforcement, for teachers to combat recruitment and radicalization? So you spent years recruiting and mm-hmm. radicalizing. So what would be something you would tell, I guess, the educators in law enforcement? This is how you identify it, which you just said, and mm-hmm. this is how you combat it. This is how you can stop it.
With empathy. You have to have empathy for that person, for that kid, that person who's believing these things. You have to find somewhere where you meet on him on a level that nobody else does. Maybe him and his mother had breast cancer, your mother had breast cancer. You talk about, you have to have empathy to make that change. If you don't, it won't work. You can't just go in with facts and figures. Booky book smart people don't change people like me. It's other people who are like me change me. So that doesn't mean if you have a criminal kid, say, oh, I'm not a criminal. You're going to find something. If you look, you're going to find something where you meet him or her on that level. There's somewhere. You've got to look for it. You got to find it. It could be father was an alcoholic. That's one of the best ones I've ever had was I was talking with a kid who hate white people and a kid who hate white at this college. And then when we start talking, comes to both, they both have fathers out. We were practicing alcoholics as they grew up. They start swapping stories. This were like the best, you know what I mean? Because you're like, yeah, my dad passed out naked when my kid friends were over. And the dude's like, one time my dad passed out naked in the front yard. You know, like they just start swapping these stories that like they never told anybody before because they were so embarrassed. Now they're swapping like it's nothing. And they were like saving each other's life. That's what you got to find.
That's amazing.
Frank, I have one last question for you. Would you have any suggestions for a good resource for our listeners who wanted to learn more about the white supremacist movement and they can do it in a safe and acceptable way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not that... I'm not an employee of Life After Hate, but just look us up at lifeafterhate.org and we can point you in any direction on if you're looking into certain groups, the Christian groups or the Odinist groups or any of these groups that you're starting to pop up in your community. Just, you don't have to share your information with us. We know how this works. So you guys just say, we need to know about this type of group and we'll give you all of our resources. Once we find out you definitely are, we'll give you every resource we have. So that's one of the good ways. There's also like the Anti-Defamation League or good groups to have a lot of information. And, we don't need a warrant. ADL, all those things, you need a warrant to look at people. We don't, we can just go look at whoever we want and do whatever we want. And then who we share the information with is, but again, I'm not a Mr. Don't Snitch guy. I'm not like, if I know you're going to harm somebody and I can't physically stop you, I'm snitching real quick. It's my job as a human being to make sure other people don't get harmed on my watch. So I don't think what people think we're all these guys are snitching. But if we can help law enforcement or help someone to have a safer, more community, absolutely. And I'd rather get people before they have to go to jail. If you can intervene before these people do crime, that's the best. And as you all know, crime prevention is a stat you can't keep. You just can't keep that stat. So we just do the best we can. And it's to try and stop that stuff from happening in the first place before you have more criminals, more jails, more prisons. I don't want to get into that. So that's we come to lifeafterhate.org and just if you have any questions, we have all experts in the field. So
is there anything, looking at your time in prison, is there anything that the jails could be doing differently? So did your time in prison, did it, I guess, radicalize you more or did it, I guess, that would be my one question. And is there anything differently inside the prisons that we could be doing differently?
There's a lot that could be done and there's stuff that I think that people are doing. But one of the big things is parole schools. Parole is where you got 6 months before you're going to get out. Let's start teaching people how to keep a budget in life. Teach them what food to eat. I mean, really, to eat better and be people to commit more crime or people that are hungry. Because you're hungry and you're either going to need drugs or, food. So, and then the other is recovery from drugs and alcohol. It's stop charging, some dude with a couple pounds of weed, long sentence of time. And then I don't want to get too much into it. Like I have my own political and personal beliefs in the prison system and the private prison industry is something we need to get away from. But the helping, and that's why I don't want to sit here and make more arguments, but I'd rather just talk about how we can help people. And that is teach people how to live when they get out of prison. I mean, really teach them how to live, again, a budget. Because I'm not that good at budgeting my money still. But it's if you can get people to learn how to budget to where they're not hungry, tired, the wife is, down their throat because they don't have the food. And if we could teach them how to live off the means that they have, it would go a long way in teaching people how to live a life that they don't need crime because criminals can live outside their means. That's what they do. And that's why they have to get and do what they do. And that's what I would think would be the best thing you could do in prisons.
Great. Well, thank you, Frank. That concludes our questions today. Before we sign off, is there any last statement you'd like to give our listeners out there?
Remember, just even if you're in law enforcement, you're not free of losing your empathy. I think law enforcement loses it fast because you deal with the worst of the worst. It's easy to lose your empathy for the world. Just try to regain it and just keep it, remember that the people have children and, they do believe what they believe is right. They do. They think it will make a better community. And we know it's not right, but if you can go into that with that communication level, it take it a lot further. And that's all. Just empathy. Practice and learn and remember what your empathy is in the world.
Great. Well, thank you. It was great hearing your story, and I really appreciate you coming in today.
Thanks.
Again, this is Matt and Kim from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness with our guest, Frank Meek. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.